Coming up on this episode of Belief Hole.
They are terrified. It's just after it happens. The woman is shaking, crying. When they describe what they saw and experienced, it will make you second guess ever going into the ocean again.
Yeah. I mean, sharks are enough for me.
I know. This is like sharks that the devil made and stretched out into a reptile serpent.
Really? I think I might rather be eaten by a sea monster than a shark.
I don't know. After hearing some of these accounts.
Right, we'll see, I guess.
The thing about sharks is, I think most of the time you don't see them coming. You know, they come up from below.
Right. Yeah.
They're those ancient warriors of the ocean.
Yeah.
But with these sea serpents, it seems like they pop up, snort snotty water at you, glare with their snaky eyes, and then, you know, open their jowls of double rowed teeth.
They're meat eaters.
Oh, yeah. It's creepy. Like, the more I looked into this, the more I started to think there's something to these stories. I mean, I always wanted to believe in Nessie.
Yeah.
And you've heard about Champ. Nessie was my first love.
Yeah.
But then, over time, you're like, they never found it in Loch Ness. They've tried so many times, and I've followed it for a long time. And you kind of lose that. But now, hearing stories, and some that are just actually terrifying.
Especially in the ocean.
Yeah. There's other ways to consider these things. So you kind of lose the interest in the physical animal until you hear stories like this.
Yeah.
Right. Is there any evidence of dragons?
Yeah, I thought about that before this episode. I was thinking about the history of dragons. A lot of them were underwater, and you know, there's always the idea that were they dinosaurs misidentified? Were dinosaurs living at the time?
Right. Was there some overlap?
Or are there just dragons, man?
There's just so much mythology behind dragons.
Yeah. Well, it's such a global thing, and I think if you're going to be skeptical, I think the most logical explanation is that people in ancient cultures found skeletal dinosaur remains and then imagined what could this be? This is something that probably still exists.
That's a great theory.
Yeah.
That's probably the case. That or the wizards hid them all, which I think is also possible.
I am a wizard!
You can only see about 25 feet in front of you in all directions. You have this turmoil, the buoy lunging, trying to take salvation on the buoy. And then right after this chaos, water settles, fog rolls in. It's very quiet. This is where it gets freaky.
Synchronicity,
Sasquatch,
Homunculus,
Alien Races,
Satanism in Hollywood,
MK Ultra,
Tartaria.
There's like a whole, I've been watching this one guy.
Close the door, it.
Jury, close your door!
What's the,
Inner Earth, Disagreements,
Ghost Dad.
I like that movie.
Dogman,
Bohemian Grove,
Corey Feldman,
Magicians Are Demons,
Specters and Spirits,
Sleep Paralysis,
Strange Disappearances,
Sky Whale Phenomena,
yes!
Alternative History,
Shadow People.
Shh, quiet, I'm trying to say words with the mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf Towers.
I would never talk about it. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic Catastrophe.
Vampire.
Well, hello, hello. Well, hello, hello. Hey, John.
Hi.
Keep that chin up.
So you look like a sad sea monster over there, John.
You do.
That doesn't make me feel better.
Well, you don't really look like a sea monster. He's just trying to tie it into the episode.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
You should know that's how I do it by now. Why are you sad, John?
Tell everyone.
My sauna broke.
It is a bummer, man.
This crazy guy just got a sauna last week.
Yeah.
That was fun to help him move in.
I used it twice, and the first time it broke and the second time it broke.
That's lame, dude.
It's sad.
It'll be fixed.
Yeah. I mean, it's that time of year where you really, I mean, that's an awesome thing to have, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to get it working soon.
Oh, I know, but.
Cheer up, cheerio.
I'm fine. Sea monsters, huh?
I know, you're super excited about this one. Okay, so this
How
one.
How many cryptids can we do?
Okay, I know. We've done a lot because of Halloween. We did a lot of spooky creatures in the unknown out there.
Yeah, this honestly came to our attention because I had an issue of 40 Times come
looks
in.
It's like a brontosaurus.
Yeah, well, yeah. So we're looking at our show notes right now, guys. We'll have this in our show notes. But the general image of this sea monster, which is like a Loch Ness kind of plesiosaur type, flippery, almost elephant-like brontosaurus, brachiosaur type creature. But today, I will make the argument that there is something else that lives in the sea. Deep, deep in the sea that is more serpentine.
Actual sea serpent.
Yes, and terrifying. And this is why I wanted to do this episode. Yeah, Chris, as you were saying, you've got a story you're going to do. It first came to your attention from 40 and Times magazine.
Yeah. I mean, lake monsters, sea monsters aren't something I've been excited about since probably sixth grade. But the account that I read in 40 and Times just was shocking, frankly. So I knew we had to do it at some point, and then it worked out well because you'd come across all the sea serpent stuff that seemed to correlate.
Yeah, the story that we're going to talk about, it involves death.
Are we going to do the Bermuda Triangle next?
If you wish. Hey, that could be expansion.
Is that what you want to do?
No.
I was actually considering the Alaska Triangle for expansion, but...
What's that? I never heard of that.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff up there.
Yes, but these stories, John, I thought the reason why these were so compelling is because, I mean, there's tragedy involved, which is unfortunate.
Right.
But it does make compelling case for the existence of these types of things. Yeah. So we're kind of focusing on those stories today. The ones where there were real consequences, you know?
Do you think being attacked by a sea monster would categorize as unfortunate?
I guess I put that kind of lightly. Traumatic.
I had an unfortunate accident.
Like a fender bender.
Yeah, running into like your neighbor is an unfortunate experience. Being eaten by a sea monster is horrific.
Yeah, that's true.
You must not like your neighbors, John. You mean like the talkers that you get stuck in conversation with, that kind of thing? Or
I'm just saying fender bender is an unfortunate...
Oh, running into like physically. I think you meant like neighbor at the grocery
that
store.
That could be too.
Right.
It'd be an unfortunate experience depending on who it is.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
But you're right. That's true. I did understate that. Traumatic is a better word. And there's one interview coming up here that Jeremy has of a recent experience that came out in an interview on the news. They sound completely traumatized.
This is why I want to do this episode. So Chris told me about the story that we're going to cover shortly coming up here, 14 times, which is an incredible story based on real events.
Controversial for sure.
Controversial, but people actually died. The guy who we're going to get the story from lived until 2016.
Yeah.
So he's a real fella. You can corroborate all that. And you can corroborate his account from the original when it was originally released in the press. So that's all there. But John, what made me decide to do this episode is after that, I just started looking into it for a little bit, just sea serpent sightings, whatever, sea monsters. And I found this interview with this couple from, where are they from?
New Jersey, right? They sound like they're from
New
Jersey.
They're not New Jersey. It's New England. When we get to it, I have the data, got the details, but they are terrified. It's just after it happens. A news crew, I think later that afternoon or something, they interviewed him. The woman is shaking, crying. The guy he's like a Sylvester Stallone kind of figure, but they're so credible because they legit experienced something. They were terrified. Other people on the shore witnessed this thing. When they describe what they saw and experienced, will make you second guess ever going into the ocean again.
Yeah.
Which if you needed help with that anyway, I'm not a big ocean guy.
Sharks are enough for me.
I know. This is like sharks that the devil made and stretched out into a reptile serpent.
Really?
Snort water at you out of their
nose?
It's
like the Dogman thing, dude.
I think I might rather be eaten by a sea monster than a shark.
I don't know. After hearing some of these accounts.
Right, we'll see, I guess.
Some of this sounds almost like that kind of window entity thing where there's the fear. Like the people, they weren't really attacked, but they were hurt. But this thing like generated
dread.
Yeah. The interview I have later on. But it almost like it sounded like it always makes eye contact, almost like that sneer.
Yeah.
Exactly. With the exactly. Did you see it already? Because that's a dead on impression.
No.
The thing about sharks is I think most of the time you don't see them coming. You know, they come up from below.
Right. Yeah.
They're those ancient warriors of the ocean. You don't see them coming. But with these sea serpents, seems like they come at you, then they pop up, snort snotty water at you, glare with their snaky eyes, and then open their jowls of double-rowed teeth.
They're meat eaters.
Oh, yeah. The ones we're going to be doing later, they're not the typical plesiosaur ones like we have in these images. These are like legit serpents.
Oh,
they might have fins or dorsal fins, but mostly they have humps.
Man, that would be crazy to see like...
Look at that guy.
Yeah. Why is he on a horse in the sea?
This is an old French medieval painting of a beast or something.
Terrifying.
Is that like a flying horse?
It looks like it's
King Arthur.
Like a Pegasus.
Pegasus.
I'm not sure that they know who painted this or what it is exactly, but it's a cool image.
That would be crazy to see a sea monster that looked like an anaconda, mm-hmm. but like that's way bigger.
You're going to hear some descriptions by real people today.
Barrel-sized body, 60 to 100 feet long.
Basketball-sized head.
Basketball-sized head with just like
basketball size?
Yeah, 3 to 4 feet.
That's not that big.
Well, it depends. Well, on a snake, that's pretty big.
Yeah, but that's not enough to like eat a person, is it?
A basketball?
I mean, your head's almost the size of a basketball.
Yeah, but the mouth is, it's longer and opens wider. Maybe not swallow you whole.
Yeah.
But enough to like bite your head off.
Right.
Well, that's okay. Enough.
The one that we're going to hear from Maine with the couple, that one, they describe it as basketball sized, but they also describe the creature as only like 15 to 20 feet long or something. Whereas most of the accounts in the same area going back centuries,
45, 50, 70 feet.
Sounds like the adult version of that. They're 3 to 4 foot heads, 60 to 150 foot long, but the same creature with like the way the details in this encounter that we're going to get to, they just, they're not making this up. It's not some kind of like, we're going to keep this myth going. Like they're terrified. They saw this thing with a white stripe down its throat, its neck, which match reports given in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, going back centuries.
Yeah.
From credible people.
This is the 1600s, at least on this continent.
Anyways, we're going to get to all that coming up, but it's fascinating and it makes these stories all the scarier and it makes me want to stay out of the ocean.
Yeah. still.
I didn't need any more reason.
I know, me either, but it's just one more. It's when someone's like, ah, it's fine. Sharks are nice. Like, yeah, but sea monsters aren't.
Next time your friend asks you to go on a yacht ride, you'll say, nope.
Yeah.
Next time P. Diddy calls.
Even lakes, man. P. Diddy. Next time. Last time I went.
Hey, Jeremy. Oh, that was bad.
That's my dream last night. My dream this morning was, I swear, so weird. We were all hanging out at Joe Rogan's ranch out in the woods somewhere. I guess in my dream he has a ranch for some reason. And we were doing outdoor activities, like, you know, lifting weights out in the woods and riding four-wheelers.
It's but right then, up your alley.
Right?
Lifting weights
but then he
in
had,
the woods.
But we all had these snorkel masks.
That is a dream for sure.
And we were going to go snorkeling. It was just, you know, the snorkel masks that just came out like last year? They're awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
You can dive pretty deep and mm-hmm. you don't have to blow out. It just knows when you're
yeah,
going under.
I used one of those.
Like a ninja mask. Anyway, I dreamt we had those. And then I woke up and I read this article and I never read the beginning introduction of it. I didn't realize that the kids that are tragically lost in our first story, they went skin diving with the scuba masks. Not the same ones because this was the 60s. But it was just weird because I just dreamt about a similar situation. But although it was with people I don't know and a place far away.
So back to the Joe Rogan Woods weightlifting.
The alternate
section.
Bohemian Grove experience.
Bizarre. Did it end well in your dream? You exchange numbers and hang out or?
Were you like excited to hang out with Joe?
We've been friends for a long time. There was like no excitement or joy.
That's funny. I know that feeling. Like I've had dreams of like people that I've listened to a lot where I'm like friends with them, mm-hmm. but you're not.
Well, or places, right? Those dream worlds, like talking to Jennifer, friend of the show recently about this kind of stuff. There's a lot of people out there who have that experience where it just feels like another reality. You know,
exactly,
sometimes you
yeah.
go to these places and we had that great call with the fellow that disagreed with us on that point, thinking it's more of like a manifestation of what you experience as a young person, like
right.
a child, and you fill in the gaps. And so you dream of these places kind of missing pieces and amalgamations. But I still contend that there is another reality, potentially, that this is real.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. All right, deal.
Are we going?
Yeah, let's do
ready?
It. Ready
to get in this?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
Let's get in
Let's
it.
Start with our first story, Chris. This comes from Pensacola, Florida. Is that correct?
Yeah, let's travel on down to Florida. I do want to say before we start the story, you know, much like kind of reminds me of Dyatlov Pass and the way that there were young people that died.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely want to treat this with respect.
Absolutely.
It is a fascinating story. And the guy who lived to tell the tale, I wouldn't say he's a controversial figure, but his story becomes a controversial figure based on the initial news report and then later the article he writes for Fate magazine, which first depicts this tale of the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Is when it first happens and he's found alive, the lone survivor of this adventure at sea. He doesn't mention the sea monster. Granted, he's 16 years old. And his accounting for this is that the head of the rescue operation advised him not to mention, you know, giant reptiles eating your friends, thinking that this kid's in shock. His story is just fabrication, trying to deal with the trauma. And if he says this to the parents of the kids who just died, it's just going to make things worse. If you say some fabricated hallucination of a sea monster,
saying is the kid, Brian McCleary, 16
yeah.
years old at the time, the lone survivor of this adventure we're about to recount, you're saying the reason that his police report or his initial press release that came out about the incident, it didn't mention the sea monster bit,
right.
which is kind of important because allegedly, the authorities advised him not to make that a part of the official statement.
His preemptive statement was that the director of the Escambia County search had initially advised him to keep quiet about the sea monster and let the matter fade away as an unfortunate tragedy at sea.
Okay.
So that's his accounting for that. But before we get into did this happen, did it not, let's hear his story.
Okay.
Because it is definitely compelling.
And where does this take place?
Pensacola, Florida.
Pensacola, Florida. Okay.
Chris, can you make this a laconic account?
Ooh, I like that term.
There was a monster. Shit happens.
You knew what that word meant?
Yeah, laconic.
How'd you know that word?
Clint Eastwood-like. We actually was listening to Hardcore History on the way to Texas, and he actually breaks down the definition.
Where that comes from.
Of laconic.
Oh, really?
There's a people in ancient Greece. They all spoke this way, but it made such an impression on the cultures around them that they were all, there was like a warrior culture.
Oh, I believe, but I could be wrong, but I believe that it was a warrior class of people.
They were very to the point people.
Exactly. They were so focused on like efficiency and war. And
here, now.
All these things created this kind of, profoundness to it.
This doesn't sound like they were very emotional beings probably. Then,
I think they were just that silent type. Yeah, stoic.
Wait, was it the Spartans? I think it was the Spartans. Yeah, it was the Spartans. This is Sparta. That was the laconic people. So that famous line, John, that really good, you hear this all throughout, echoing through like Westerns and movies today, but that line, someone's like, hand over your weapons, hand over your guns. And then you have the laconic phrase reply, come and take them. That's like a laconic sort of Clint Eastwood kind of thing.
Go ahead. Make my day.
There's this battle where the Spartans were holding off the largest army, like millions of people, the Persians or something. They were holding them off. And finally, the negotiator came up and said, like, you don't want to mess with these people. So he convinces the king of Persia to go, and I could be completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is right, to go talk to the head Spartan dude. And he goes down and he, you know, at this long diatribe, delivers the message of the Persians, like, we will make you rulers of your land if you just, you know, open the gates and don't fight. And it's like this group of like 400 or 300, which is where the movie comes from, against this giant army. And after all this big...
You don't have to give the whole background, just get to
after the big argument that the Persians give, the very wordy argument, they say, lay down your weapons, we'll give you this. Their single response is, come and take them.
Oh, that's it. Funny.
And then that became like, now you hear that all the time, Texas, right? Come and take them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I fully expected you to not know that word.
Try another. I know most.
Yeah, we got lucky.
Basically, all those like 80s, 90s action movie catchphrases, they're pretty much iconic phrases if you think about it.
Interesting.
What was that great?
Laconia.
Go ahead, punk. Make my day.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. So Laconia was a region of Greece, which there included the city of Sparta. So we were there.
Awesome.
We were tangling all this together.
Tangling?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this account happened March of 1965 in the waters around Pensacola, Florida. Four teenagers, Brad Rice, who's 14, Warren Felly, who's 16, Eric Riley, who's 16, and Stuart Bill, 17, along with Brian McCleary, 16, and he becomes the lone survivor later on and the author of the story. They were skin diving from a raft in the Gulf of Mexico when the tide began to carry them out to sea. McCleary was found sleeping on a beach the next day, the raft washed ashore with face masks, shoes, and fins inside. Now this is the story.
On March 24th, 1962, the five boys set out in a 7-foot Air Force life raft to the wreck of the USS Massachusetts. This is an above-water wreck on a sandbar about 2 miles from the coast. McCleary described the weather as a perfect day for skin diving and not a cloud in the sky. The water was calm. The boys took turns paddling towards the wreck. However, the weather rapidly deteriorated. White caps formed upon the water, and the sky began to gray. The breeze was picking up. The boys decided to give up on the wreck and make it back to shore. Most of them would never make it. The tide began to carry the raft out in the open ocean. Two of the boys jumped out in an attempt to push the raft while the other two rowed, but it didn't help, and they gave up. They tried to wave down a passing boat, but it didn't stop.
McCleary pointed out a buoy about a mile in the distance.
Hey guys, look, let's head for the buoy.
And then began paddling toward it. The plan was to hook it with a drag anchor. As they neared it, the waves were threatening to swamp the raft. Only the inflated sides kept them afloat. They neared the buoy, but before McCleary could toss the drag anchor, the waves lifted the buoy up from its mooring and a riptide formed beneath. They looked at the 20-foot-tall red metal behemoth as McCleary stood up and hurled the anchor, like a lasso, at the buoy. Before the anchor reached the buoy, the raft was caught in the current and dragged straight toward the bottom of the buoy. McCleary yelled for everyone to jump as the buoy came down off the wave, smashing into the raft. Sally spotted the raft resurfacing. McCleary and Riley reached it first and were able to flip it over. They climbed back in as a cold driving rain began. They watched helplessly as the current pushed them past the Massachusetts. McCleary noted the wheelhouse sticking out of the water and wind roaring through the windows, making a sound like a siren.
After a time, the wind and the rain and the waves subsided and a thick fog rolled in. McCleary describes the silence and stillness, writing, "Not a wave rippled, not a fish broke water, not a seagull called."
That reminds me there, we read about the Oz effect, that quiet before the weirdness happens, before the high strangeness occurs, where everything gets silent, where all the sounds...
Before a tornado.
Exactly.
Eerily silent. He said that for the first time in his life, he was really scared.
For the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was only 16, I think.
Oh, okay.
His friend, one of the other swimmers, Brad Rice, said, "We're dead. We died in that storm."
Yeah, basically making the point there that it was so odd. It felt so strange that everything just stopped. That they thought that after this chaos happened...
You have this turmoil, the buoy lunging them, trying to take salvation on the buoy. And then right after that, after this chaos, water settles, fog rolls in.
You can only see about 25 feet in front of you in all directions. It's very quiet. And then the water becomes oddly warm and you just feel like, is this the same reality? Did we die?
Yeah.
That seems like that's the point they were at.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Rice began to panic. They tried to calm him down and decided all they could do was sit and wait. The fog limited them to 25 feet of visibility. The water, which had been notably cold at the beginning of the trip, was now unusually warm, yet this was only March. Bill suddenly bolted upright and said he heard a boat.
Guys, did you hear that?
No one else heard anything, but the air suddenly became thick with a sickening smell of dead fish. 40 feet away, a tremendous splash generated waves that reached the raft and broke over the edge. They heard another splash. And through the fog, they could see a shadowy form that looked like a telephone pole, 10 feet tall with a bulbous shape on the top. It stood there for a moment, then bent in the middle and dove underwater. A high-pitched whine broke the silence and the boys panicked.
Oh my God, what is that thing?
The five of them put on their swim fins and jumped into the water, which was covered in patches of crusty brown slime. That's bizarre, and I'll tell you why later.
Is that Diane?
Yeah. McCleary noted a slight current that he hoped would lead to the shore. Instead, they decided to try to reach the Massachusetts. Riley and McCleary took the lead, with the other three close behind. Whatever they had seen, they could now hear hissing and splashing behind them. The fog was clearing, but the water was getting rougher. It began raining again, and the water was getting colder.
McCleary was beginning to get a cramp, so he started swimming with slow, deliberate strokes, more concerned with staying afloat. Riley was still nearby, and they would call back to Rice, Sally, and Bill.
Hang in there, guys.
As they swam toward the wreck, they suddenly heard a scream, and Sally yelled that the monster had gotten Rice.
They took him! The thing took Brad!
But his yells were suddenly cut off by a short cry.
Guys! Oh my God!
Bill caught up with Riley and McCleary. The only sounds were the ocean and thunder. McCleary slipped into a fugue state, unaware of the ocean depth or what was out there, and imagined sinking peacefully to the bottom. The pain in his legs snapped him back to reality, and he realized Bill had vanished. He and Riley dove under, but there was no sign of Bill. Riley grimaced and also went underwater. He was cramping up badly.
Guys, grab onto me!
McCleary had him wrap his arms around him and began swimming. They struggled through the water for several hours? Wow. Night had fallen, and the two struggled onward in the dark, waves breaking over their heads.
Imagine that would be terrible.
Yeah. This is where it gets freaky.
Yeah. Pretty freaky already, I mean, if you consider everything that's going on, especially that moment where they see this 10-foot-tall telephone pole silhouette come up in the fog.
Yeah. Yeah, so this 10-foot telephone pole-shaped silhouette emerges from the water with a bulbous top and then a high-pitched whine. Like
and it bends at its half point and dips back.
Can you imagine seeing that while you're swimming out in the middle of the ocean?
I mean, I just pass out of fear.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like that's what McCleary was thinking. Remember that said that fugue state where he just all of a sudden started thinking about floating to the bottom of the ocean?
Yeah.
It's one of those like trauma situations where it's like you just go into shock.
You don't want to deal with what's going to happen next.
Your brain tries to go somewhere else.
Yeah. It sounds horrible. It's terrifying.
Don't go swimming. We're getting a lot of hate mail from this. People like, don't scare people from the ocean. The ocean's awesome. It's awesome, but from the beach.
We don't have flippers or gills.
Although we are designed that we can hold our breath like two or three times as long when we're underwater.
It's a dive reflex, yeah.
They call it the dive reflex. So there are reasons why but just not in the ocean. Stick to lakes.
Lakes are scary too.
Yeah, there's plenty of lake monsters.
That's what I want to mention, the Seneca Lake Monster. Seneca, New York. This lake monster from like the 1800s or something. I'll have it linked in the show notes. I won't go into the story, but there is an interesting point. One of the things they describe is this creature had this horny, brown, slimy brine on it. Mm-hmm. And the steamship that saw this creature, when they noticed it, they decided to charge it to kill it. So they charge it. Then all the people on board are screaming and stuff. They go, for some reason, the captain's like, I'm going to get this thing. Charges it, supposedly rams it, snaps its spine. And the women are screaming and the men are cheering as this thing sinks into the sea or sinks into the lake. And then they hook it, they pull it back up because they want to bring it to shore. And right as they were pulling it in, the rope slips off the tail and it slides back down and they couldn't retrieve it. But it had double rows of teeth, just like in a lot of these reports. Although this one's more full-bodied, not serpentine as much. But it's an interesting story. I'll put in the show notes. But
definitely.
That's awesome. Kudos to that captain, man. Ram it down. Ram it.
What's the famous Jaws line?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
We're
going
to need a bigger boat.
Although we cover that Mandela effect, I think it's actually a different line.
Shut up.
Okay. Continuing on with the story. Just about when McCleary was about to give up, a lightning strike lit up the sky and they saw the silhouette of the Massachusetts. A wave broke over them and the two separated. Another bolt of lightning showed Riley ahead of him, swimming toward the ship. The creature surfaced next to Riley. McCleary noted the long neck and small eyes. The mouth opened. And it dove on top of Riley. McCleary screamed and swam past the ship. He didn't remember swimming the 2 miles from the wreck to the shore. He slept in an abandoned watchtower until the morning when fishermen spotted him. It's pretty messed up.
So he lost all of his friends.
Yeah.
This thing.
Pretty
and
tragic.
He watched this thing eat them, essentially. Or like pull them underwater.
Well, one guy.
One guy. Oh, the rest just disappeared behind him, right?
Two of them that were behind, he heard one yell that the monster had got the other. And then when he and his friend tried to go back, couldn't find him. And then the other guy that was next to him, I think it was Brad, he vanished under the water. And then the one getting eaten at the end.
It's tragic that this is a real story. I have a shot of this, open the show notes, an image of the actual news report. 4 kids die, one survivor in this, you know, experience. And at that time, they didn't know that there was a sea monster involved. But what's weird is
this is in the 70s?
60s, 65 or 62.
Is this guy still alive?
He died in 2016.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't think he ever gave any interviews or anything about it, right?
Except for this. He gave one interview. Well, there was a cryptozoologist that wrote him, you know, maybe like a decade or two later and asked him for some more details because he said he had an account that was startling, similar to his. And so he gave some more information there. But no, he wasn't seeking more publicity. He didn't do like a tour.
Yeah,
he did this one story.
I'm sure.
And the original interview, if you guys want to check it out, it's in Fate magazine. I didn't have it. So I went off the
good luck finding
the reporting on 40 and Times reporting.
It's out of print and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah. Which is why we kind of stuck with this. But
we did find the original news article though.
Yeah. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, and I should probably get this guy's name real quick, but the guy who wrote this article, his name is David Goodsword. You know, he leans more towards that McCleary made this up.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
One argument I heard was he had a nervous breakdown. So Brad Rice, one of his friends who died, his body washed up on shore a week later. And I think it was at that point, I think that Brian McCleary had a nervous breakdown.
For like 3 months.
And people argued that he basically in the nervous breakdown, his brain created this to explain what happened, this tragedy, that there was this monster, and it kind of put that in his head, which I think is kind of a thin, I mean, that's, you can blame anything on, well, he went crazy.
Yeah.
You know,
when I want to talk about a couple things that David Goodsword brings up, which are interesting skepticisms related to this story, but I'd like to talk about it because I think some of them are, you can definitely argue the other way.
Right.
So like one of the things he talks about a lot is like the placement of the buoy that came down on them, the color. Like he said, indeed, there's a red buoy nearby there, but it's like 2 miles from that location. And it has a flashing light and a bell, or it did at the time. So they should have seen a light and that wasn't mentioned. There was a black one that was more where they were, but McCleary said it was red. So little details, I feel like, and after an experience like that, you might not remember exactly all the details. So sure, is that a possible sign of fabrication? Yeah, definitely. Is it also a possible sign of shock or post-traumatic stress? Absolutely. Another one, I think, one of the hardest skeptical points to argue, which he makes here, I think, is the monetary gain.
Oh, right.
So when he wrote this story for Fate magazine, McCleary,
it was 3 years after the actual experience, right?
I think it was longer than that.
Wasn't it 62 to 65, I thought?
He was 16 when the experience happened. He was in, I think, college when he wrote Fate magazine article.
No, the Fate magazine article came out in 65. So it was 3 years after the experience in 1962.
Okay, anyway, so he writes this for Fate, and this is the first time we have the aspect of the sea serpent in this account. Why I don't think the monetary gain argument makes any sense is because he would have made what today is roughly $340 or something for the story. Now, do you think that you would need $340 that badly that you would make up a story about how several of your friends died and they were eaten by sea monsters? That doesn't seem like enough money to me to do that. It's obviously not for fame because he didn't continue on.
That doesn't make sense at all. I think it's more likely that he lost his mind than that.
Right. Yeah, if it didn't happen.
Right.
The case for it happening is obviously that there are stories, and this takes place in Florida, and the stories we're going to be talking about are up the East Coast, up north in the colder waters of Maine and Massachusetts, but it's still on the East Coast. And you've had, you know, sightings down there for centuries too in Florida and off the coast of different kinds of sea creatures. So to say like, there's a history of this kind of stuff, someone experienced this when his friends died, and just say, well, there's no way you can prove it. He must be lying for money. I mean, right. You can say that, but there's no way to know.
I think you can make arguments on both sides. I think one of the reasons why this author leaned more towards the skeptical point is because it is kind of a dangerous thing to talk about when you've got families who had their right. children die. I think people want to just tend to not support the crazier idea.
Right. Well, even if you have a loved one who's murdered, you see it all the time, like, well, in movies and TV shows, but in actual documentaries too, where they're talking about someone who was wrongly convicted, it's so traumatic that they don't want to consider that someone else did it. Mm-hmm. You know, even if the evidence mounting up, it's such a painful experience to say, like, so imagine going from like, it wasn't Steve, it was Jack that killed him and he's roaming free.
Oh yeah.
Then jumping to like, it was a sea monster named Jack that killed him.
Yeah.
Like those kind of jumps really hard to do.
And I totally get that too. Like I totally get that point. Like I think it's a sensitive thing for sure. I mean, probably the most kind of sensitive thing you could be dealing with.
If you died and I thought that maybe a ghost killed you, but it would feel less serious. People wouldn't take it seriously. What story do you want to tell? You know what I mean? Or believe?
The truth.
The truth. Thank you, John. Here in the hole, it's all about the truth.
So yeah, I thought that was a pretty crazy tale. So I just wanted to share it. What do you guys think? You know, take it with a grain of salt and with your own critical mind.
I mean, I think out of all the places on Earth, like the ocean is by far the most uncharted.
Oh, yeah. Know?
I mean, anything could be in the ocean, including mm-hmm. aliens. That are not aliens, but they look like aliens.
What?
Well, I mean, like...
talking about octopuses.
Oh, you're talking
again?
About like maybe a race of humanoid creatures that have been on Earth for thousands of years.
That aren't really from another planet, but they just live here.
Underwater.
In places we have yet to know about.
That's very possible.
One skeptical argument for the specific attack, the Pensacola, is the confusion with this supposed sea monster in the area.
The sperm whale.
The North Atlantic right whale. And it sounds silly. I kind of was very skeptical about this explanation, the skeptical explanation. But when you look at the bottom of the neck, or basically under the mouth going down towards the flippers, mm-hmm. I'm trying to find a good picture of it, there's a comparison that shows what it looks like. And it looks like it doesn't have this part of the body. And all that's left is kind of like this long neck with a head.
Oh, I've heard that argument.
So you can make that mistake.
Yeah, but it doesn't go 10 feet above the water.
Well, it's also, it stays away from humans. It's rare in the area. I think they're not there anymore. They weren't there years ago. So the timeline doesn't match up. And they're, you know, vegetarians. So.
Right. Well, in that area.
Or they're not people either.
In the Gulf, there's been a bunch of accounts that really relate to this story.
Yeah.
We'll have the articles linked in the show notes. In 1889, the Los Angeles Daily Herald reported Captain James P. Hare of the Trinity Shoal lightship off the mouth of the Mississippi River killed another behemoth.
Ooh, another one.
Yeah, there was a previous account. Captain Hare describes it as, quote, and John, if you want to be the captain, the sea captain.
Hideous a creature? That part?
But you gotta be a captain, though.
Hideous a creature as ever the human eye rested upon. I found it impossible to name or classify this monster.
Good. Hare and his crew armed themselves and approached the sea serpent in a small boat. The monster began thrashing wildly when Hare fired at close range and then opened its mouth, revealing large tusk-like teeth, and charged. According to Hare,
the creature seized the side and gun.
I love that all captains, no matter where they are, have this accent.
The creature seized the size and gunwale of our boat and crushed it as easily as though it was made of glass.
Using the captain's rifle, axes, hatchets, and harpoons, the crew finally killed the Leviathan. And Hare cut off the head and took it back to the ship. Hare described the creature thusly.
The serpent was rusty black on top, fading to a yellowish white on the underpart.
Part.
Ooh, it's underparts.
On the underbosom.
There you go.
While he was not able to judge its overall length, he claimed that at least 40 to 50 feet of the animal was visible under the water. No mention was made of what happened to the severed head, unfortunately. That'd be good to know. There's another account I'm going to skip, but the reason why I want to mention it is because they corroborate your upcoming stories, Jer, with greenish back, which caused it to look black in the water. The underbelly was yellow. Again, this like white or yellow underbelly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, John, why don't you go ahead and read? This one's pretty incredible.
Okay.
according to the Washington...
Wait, you don't have to be a sea captain for this one.
According to the Washington Times, Henry Nelligan, the steamer Arata's third officer, filed a report with the U.S. Navy's Hydrographic Office in which he wrote, quote, "We passed a large sea serpent appearing about 100 feet long. The head had a blunt, square nose and was ejecting water to the height of 2 or 3 feet from its nostrils."
That's important from its nostrils. Remember that.
"The animal had 3 distinct sets of fins and a tail lying across like a porpoise. And its back was a series of humps like a camel. It was heading east and moving slowly." End quote.
Yeah, so that's interesting, especially the snorting.
Yeah. Right?
That's a common thing.
That couldn't be like a
breaching whale or something. Yeah. Yes, except in the interview that we're going to hear that's going to terrify your butt off, John.
Well, that's a blowhole. It's not really nostrils. You could argue maybe I don't know if porpoises blow out their nose.
You could say that's a concoction, like, they saw something.
I feel like you could get that confused.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is that when we come to that interview later that's going to scare your butt off, John, again.
Butts off.
Is they describe that exact thing. It snorted water and it hissed at us. And the hissing was heard in that first story we heard from 30 years earlier.
Right.
In the 60s in a different part of the coast.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's creepy. Like, the more I looked into this, the more I started to think there was something to these stories. I mean, I always wanted to believe in Nessie.
Yeah.
And you've heard about Champ, you know, in Lake Champlain, all these things.
Nessie was
up.
My first love in this whole field. And when I was sixth grade, I did that whole demonstration in class because I wanted to be a cryptozoologist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, over time, you're like, they never found it in Loch Ness. They've tried so many times and I've followed it for a long time. And you kind of lose that. But now hearing stories and some that are just actually terrifying.
Especially in the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, we also looked at the angle of the summoning of the, maybe a demonic or demigod.
Yeah.
With Aleister Crowley, like that episode we did. Great episode. But so there's other ways to consider these things. So you kind of lose the interest in the physical animal until you hear stories like this.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're going to get back to this after the break with some even crazier stories.
Travel up
Do
the coast.
You feel like, you know, if Bigfoot can be real, then sea monsters for sure.
Oh, it'd be so much easier.
Much more likely.
We've only explored, 5% of the ocean or something crazy like that?
Yeah, I think it might even be less than that.
Yeah.
Well, the giant squid, that was a cryptid for a long time until they found giant squid.
Well, look, they're all like, if you look,
they're rare. I mean, they live really deep down.
People back in the day used to draw them all the time.
Well, the sea monsters?
Yeah,
there's I mean, all those old maps that have like the beasties and the, and you know, dragons be here, that kind of thing. Like, I was just looking at some of this before I did this episode and I was like, man, this'd be a cool one to do for like an expansion, just focus on these different creatures. But I have one coming up after the break that's just a little taste of it. Just some of the crazy stuff that might have been out there. This is just more something that's the size of it and kind of a story that goes along with it.
Is
that's
there any
crazy
evidence of dragons?
Yeah, I thought about that before this episode. I was like, cause I was thinking about the Japanese fishermen that discovered that supposed plesiosaur skeleton that they think is a
basking shark.
Basking shark. And that's interesting. We won't go into that. But then I was thinking about Asia and I was thinking about the history of dragons and the serpents. A lot of them were
everywhere in the world.
A lot of them were underwater or they could go through air and water. And, you know, there's always the idea that were they dinosaurs misidentified? Were dinosaurs living at the time they experienced these living dragons?
There's some overlap.
Or are there just dragons, man?
I have a whole tab of pages saved from 2 days ago where I spent 2 hours just looking at possible dragon evidence.
Oh, really?
And then I saved it in a bookmark just in case we did it somehow. Because that was my favorite thing. Like in third grade, I was a big King Arthur guy. Yeah. Loved dragons. I had dragon posters.
Nerd
I was super cool.
Yeah. There's just so much mythology behind dragons.
Yeah. Like, well, it's such a global thing. And I think, I mean, and we should do an episode on that.
It had to come from somewhere.
Well, absolutely. I think if you're going to be skeptical, I think the most logical explanation is that people in ancient cultures found skeletal dinosaur remains and then imagined what could this be. This is something that probably still exists. But I like to think that there is evidence or hope, you know, at least hope that they lived alongside some remnant of dinosaur that, you know, there's still pterodactyl sightings today.
Like where does the fire breathing come from?
That could be, I mean, there's always exaggeration.
It's their fire bladders that are
I know,
below
but
the jaw.
Why would you, you know, why would that be something you think? Maybe just because it was so much more terrifying.
Well, they did find that skeleton recently in that wizard's castle.
Fire breathing dragons.
Did you see that buried under the stone?
Maybe because when they first started, fire was still fairly you know, amazing still and new.
Fire is so passe.
Well, it was.
I mean, you know what I mean?
It was supernatural.
Yes. Yeah. Fire was
it was a big part of their lives, and it was dangerous.
Right.
And, you know, we used it for protection and destruction, and it was just like,
right. It's like a force technology.
Of nature.
Yeah. I always had this thought that when I was super into dragons, third grade or whatever.
2 years ago.
Might have been sixth grade.
Did you have them on your Trapper Keeper?
I did. No, I had Quantum Leap, the whole like intro monologue.
Striving to put right what once went wrong.
Anyway.
Wow, that's super nerdy.
I was a cool
kid. I did too. I had the same thing.
Let me finish my thought. So dragons, right? So, but my hypothesis in sixth grade was that what if the alchemical composition that allowed them to breathe this fire, to create this combustion from their mouth, this sort of chemical in their body, what if it was corrosive enough that once they died, the active ingredient that would block it from hurting themselves was no longer there? So that's why you don't have skeletons, because that corrosive chemical compound would just eviscerate the skeletal structure. Therefore, no evidence.
That's a great theory.
Yeah.
That's probably the case. That or the wizards hid them all, which I think is also possible.
The wizards of Voltaire.
Because wizards go with dragons, right? That's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, they fly
like their pets.
On their backs.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird synchronicity. The story coming up here right after the break is about a cartographer from Catalonia that was hired by the King of Aragon. Aragon is the name of that famous Strider children's book about taming your dragon.
I thought you were talking about Lord of the Rings.
Aragon was the name of the dragon. What a weird synchronicity. Sorry, that just happened and I had to say it. Okay, let's take a break. And when we get back, we're going to scare your socks off with some real stories, and you're going to hear from the voices of people who are terrified by things in the sea.
Pretty traumatic.
We'll be back.
Well, welcome back. Leonard will not be joining us for the remainder of this podcast, but we may call him back. This, John, is an oarfish. This is what most people skeptically argue that what people are experiencing, especially in that Pensacola one.
Sea serpents.
Are as sea serpents, but this doesn't make sense.
You know, people think we're douches when we play video on our podcast.
I know, but they're going to be in the show notes. I'm going to try to add something.
You can follow along.
These get up to 50 feet, largest of the bony fish.
Yeah, that does not make sense to me. I mean, it's weird looking. I can see how like ancient stuff, but it doesn't describe what...
But ancient people weren't dumb. They just didn't, you know, they weren't as familiar if they weren't
right.
out on boats very often.
It's a monster fish. It's not a sea monster.
Anyways, it does not explain a lot of the descriptions of like what we see.
They're trying to say that's like when it's flipping through the water, that's what makes humps,
I bet you
right?
That's good eating.
I can get you see, it does make humps. Our shots were, but they're usually when there are a couple swimming around and I could see like a short window of
that thing is crazy.
Encounter where you'd be like, oh, that's a sea serpent, you know, but it doesn't explain like the actual attacks and the,
or coming out of the water 10 feet and right. Yeah. Snorting water.
That
at
thing
you.
Is only like, oh, I guess it's probably like 20 feet maybe. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they can get up to 40 or 50 feet.
Again, no, that's the basking shark. Again, we are linking this in the show notes. These get up to 50
crazy
feet.
Looking. Look how shiny it is.
Yeah, very shiny.
It's on pretty.
Go further. That's how shiny.
Yeah, very shiny. It's pink. It's got pink furls on it.
It's very fun. It's got a lot of flair. But it also doesn't
shiny.
It doesn't look like the description. First of all, it's silver. It's not green or mucky brown with a white belly.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it does not match.
I mean, come on.
I think the North American right whale, I think that's what it was we talked about before the break, is more likely.
The basking shark has this big nose kind of thing where its actual skull is. So if the bottom jaw breaks off, then it kind of looks like a plesiosaur skeleton. I can see that argument for some of these experiences, but not while it's alive. That right. doesn't make sense. Let's hear the story
Unless
of the couple,
Unless he got his
Jared.
Jaw broken off in real life.
That's true, but I don't think you'd live very long if you couldn't eat.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how long fish can live without a jaw.
Okay, so this was kind of a cool story. So before we get into the really scary story, which is coming up in a moment here, we talked about the maps and the beasties that are on there. This comes from a 14th, 15th century cartographer, Catalonian cartographer named Machia de Viladestes. He was around from like the end of the 1300s to the early 1400s. He was sent on expeditions, a lot of expeditions for the King of Aragon, which contained Catalonia and other areas in Spain at the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So he created a nautical chart in 1413 that included, and we'll have this in the show, it's pretty cool, included the Northern Ocean and specifically west of Norway. There's this depiction that was representative of these accounts of basically great whales that were mistaken for land masses. So much so that
awesome.
Ships would dock on them and set fires to keep themselves warm.
Surely that's folklore.
This is an excerpt from the map, the description. This sea is called Mar Bocciano, and therein are found great fish, which sailors take to be small islands, and take up their quarters on these fish. And the sailors land on these islands and make fires, and cause such heat that the fish feels it and sets itself in motion, and they have no time to get on board and are lost.
and those who know this land on the said fish, and there make thongs of its back, and make fast the head of the ship's anchor. And in this way they flay the skin off the fish, whereof they make ropes for their ships, and of the skin are made good coverings for haystacks. So this is suggested in this legend folklore that these great fish that that sailors would basically land on them, create fires, and then they thought that they were land masses, small islands. And by the time they set the fire, the heat would wake up the fish. It would swim down and you could use the anchor and stuff to skin it and use the body parts for materials for their ships and things.
What is this thing called?
Very likely true.
Is that next to the thing that slides down the hill with its saliva?
Oh yeah, the Slide Rock Bolter. That was from our expansion episode, guys. We'll link that in the show notes. That was a great one.
Did you
one.
Know, Jeremy, as yeah. you're describing this, and this is what? You said 1300s to 1400s,
1413
right?
is when this map was made.
Okay, well, did you know that in 12th century... Uh-huh. So I guess that would be 1300s.
No, that would be 1100s.
Okay, well, math. The Hufgufa is an Icelandic sea monster the size of an island. It's like whale-like.
Shut up, because this is in the Northern Seas west of Norway.
Right, exactly. It's the name of a massive sea monster reported.
You just corroborated island whales.
Reported in the Orvar Odds saga to have existed in the Greenland Sea. It's a different sea, which was said to disguise itself as an island or pair in the Northern Seas. Rising from the sea.
That's bizarre.
I mean,
it could, obviously, you could say.
It's just a weird, probably folklore. They're very close together.
If these stories just exist in the Northern Seas, that'd be kind of interesting, right? If there wasn't a parallel.
I mean, I'm sure they traded. They probably traded stories.
I'm saying these traded stories, but what if it doesn't exist anywhere else? What if it's just the Northern Seas are known for these island sized whales and fish?
They got a Kraken up there, too. Anyways, I want to hear about what that couple has to say.
All right, let's get it from the horse's mouth, or in this case, the Falls Rivers couple's mouth. So this YouTube video, I'm going to probably re-upload this because some random person uploaded it, and they titled it Crazy Fall River Family, which I don't think they're crazy. I think they
seem very genuine.
Yeah, they seem very affected by this. Crazy Fall River Family attacked by a sea monster. And we'll link this in the show notes.
Anyone's crazy that it has an experience like that, people say. Bad people.
Oh, that they're crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true, John. Good observation.
They're bad peoples.
This is a really intense experience from Maine. Eyewitness account caught on the news. So the news interviewed him shortly after, mm-hmm. I think later
is
in the day.
Is this a YouTube clip or something?
It's on YouTube. I think I might put it up on our channel because it's from a news channel, but the only place I could find it was some random person that uploaded it to their channel. The argument is that this could be Cassie. Now, Cassie is from Cape Casco, which is in the New England area, very close to where all these sightings have happened since the 1700s, 1600s.
Tons of them up there.
Tons. Way more than Florida, I think.
And all very similar, most very similar.
These are the serpentine experiences. Yeah, and so we're going to play this clip, and then we have some accounts that are going to corroborate what these people experienced. And I guarantee you, it's unlikely that these people have an understanding of the history of this creature in the area, and yet they corroborate it with an eyewitness
interview
account.
With Lauren Coleman?
No, that's after. Lauren Coleman, interestingly, he coined the name Cassie.
Oh, really?
For the Cape Casco monster. And it corroborates the same thing with the kind of greenish skin, dark
the white
skin,
underbelly.
But the white stripe under the neck. And so I think he believes it's like a mammal, potentially. Yeah. But
instead of a reptile?
I would argue that all the case in the area, you know, not to disagree with Lauren, because he's a great guy, does awesome work, but it just seems like it works with all of these other experiences in that area in New England.
Aren't there snakes with white underbellies? Or is that just like a Disney thing?
I'm sure there are.
There's plenty of reptiles with white bellies.
Frogs.
But they're usually not 100 feet long, snorting water.
Salamanders.
I think those are both amphibians.
You'll hear accounts of the swimming of this thing.
I think so.
Is it a reptile, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think it's
No, it's not.
It's an amphibian, isn't it?
Reptiles and amphibians, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, kind of like humans.
Okay, are we going to play this or just
Yes, you guys keep interrupting. The thing you'll notice in these encounters coming up too that's distinct is the swimming style, that kind of up and down motion, right?
Or like side to side.
Snakes go side to side in the water. So these
they go up and down too.
Mm-hmm. What, snakes?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Sometimes.
Either way, you're smiling to me means you're just
they go whoop
pulling my leg. Okay, anyways.
Maybe they do.
You'll hear accounts where they kind of switch back and forth from the snake line serpentine
to the humping.
Mm. They hump a lot in these waters. Mm. Lots of humping. Okay, so let's play this clip.
This has been a summer of frightening animals in Rhode Island. A piranha in Coventry, an alligator
piranha.
In Lincoln.
Ooh, only one?
An unknown scary creature in Portsmouth. Whatever it was, was so big and so scary, a Fall River couple thought they were going to die. It's a story
that's intense.
Only here on Eyewitness News. The couple spoke exclusively with our Sean Daly. Sean joins us now with their amazing ordeal.
This guy's awesome.
Anything quite like this
around here before. Old news.
Imagine 90s news.
Mindlessly in the late afternoon.
Swimming mindlessly.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, a huge, horrifying creature, roughly 15 feet long, rocks your world.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So 90s.
Tuesday afternoon here at Teddy's Beach in Portsmouth. What happened gives new meaning to this danger sign.
Very real.
It's still hard for her, isn't it?
Yeah, she went to a counselor to talk to a counselor this morning. Right?
She had to go to a counselor that day to talk to someone.
It was low tide, and Rachel Carney was out beyond the danger sign, floating on her back, relaxing, when big trouble struck.
I turned around, I heard a hissing sound.
That hissing.
So I stopped, I looked beside me, and all I seen was a face come up with these big teeth, and I just remember the face being like shaped like a basketball, and the face went in, like kind of sucked in, and then went like squared off.
Triangle.
And had all white, and it kept swimming around me. It rubbed up against my leg. So I just stopped and I pretended like I wasn't moving. That's when it rubbed up, went down, and kept going around me.
It's terrifying.
It rubbed up against your leg?
Up against my leg.
Literally. It touched you?
It touched me. That's how I knew it was scary.
Scaly.
With scales, because I felt the scales, and plus I seen the face. So I started swimming away. I yelled, Denny, help me, something's chasing me.
Rachel Carney's fiance, Dennis Cellos, had been fishing with a buddy on these rocks. He raced into the water.
This guy's so Stallone.
It's going to get her. I grabbed her by the ass, or rear end.
I grabbed her by the ass.
Is it a rear end?
Whipped her in. We're over her head. I whipped her in. I says, Rachel, just swim. Don't turn around no matter what you hear, right?
So Stallone. It's crazy. He's scared. You can hear it.
Now, I stood there, and the thing's going like around me and stuff, all right? And I can see how big it is and stuff, and it's gigantic, okay? It has scales on it and stuff. Now, all of a sudden, from me to you away, this big head comes up. Honestly, I've never seen nothing like this before in my life. It's like a basketball. It's like this big, okay? It comes up, and it's got these fangs, like my fingers, right? The first... this many in the bottom and about two or three at the top, plus layers inside, okay?
That double rows. Double rows, yeah.
And it's like blackish on the top a little bit, and it's got a couple of scales that you can see and stuff, and you can see the white starting under its neck.
There it is.
And it shoots water out of its nose, right? Out of its mouth, it goes like this to me. It goes... and it spit the water out of me. Now I think it's going to kill me, you know what I mean?
Imagine that.
Freaky.
The group thinks the creature was attracted to blood from a nasty injury to Joey Malo's leg. Joey was out in the water as he is right now, cleaning his leg. Joey, how much blood was there?
I bled for an hour and a half, and
what is going on?
Stop.
He's just washing his leg in the water for an hour and a half, bleeding. Joey's chumming the water. let her finish the story.
I will not ever go in salt water again. Because I am that scared. I thought I was dead that day, honestly. I didn't think he was going to make it in time to get me. I just thought I was dead. I thought it was a piranha.
At first, I thought it was an eel, okay? Because it was when it was rolling first, right? It would roll and you could see the white and stuff. But when it got to chase her, it was going like this.
Make like a serpentine motion.
You know what I mean? Like they go a little bit like this, like a hump sort of.
Humps, yeah.
Like a barracuda, similar, like that, all right?
Man, you're still in the moment right now, 2 days later. You're still in this moment, are you?
I am flipped over this. I went to bed. I've been going to bed with things grabbing me, wrapping around my neck, choking, fighting underground and everything.
Man, that's trauma right there.
Still a mystery what the creature was. State environmental agents checked out the scene today and found nothing. So the best guess comes from marine experts we checked with.
This part.
They figure it may have been some sort of a tropical fish that migrated here with a warm gulf.
Another badger.
Mother ocean.
Mother ocean.
What is that?
Dude. I love people's explanations. Probably a tropical fish of
a
some
small
sort
story.
Came in with a warm breeze. Mother ocean.
Mother ocean.
It's so funny because always these explanations to her are hilariously amazing. When there's something like this that's so vivid and real and descriptive, and they say, we've talked to marine biologists and most suggest that a tropical fish has swum into the bay. You know, was that, right. They said something like that? Like a, you know, a rare tropical fish,
but you're like a warm,
does that sound
stream?
Like razor teeth, basketball sized head with scales and fangs.
What's weird about that though, is like, I mean, those people definitely saw something and
they seem pretty traumatized.
Yeah.
By it.
I believe them. I just like, where is it? Like, where'd it go? Mm-hmm. Like that was a place where people are all the time. And if this thing is a predator, you know, in a highly populated area, how come no one else has ever seen it?
Well,
but not many times.
Right. And they're spread out. And I think it's because, well, this is, again, this one is connected.
That thing sounded mad too. Like it hissed at him. Like, him being there.
Is this in an enclosed lake or is
it? No, it's a bay for the ocean.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's a bay for the ocean. Mm-hmm. Are you sure?
Yeah. Where did they say at the beginning where it is? Fall River's the community.
Portsmouth.
It's right on the water.
Yeah, then. Massachusetts is bay. The bay there.
Okay.
I thought it was Maine.
Massachusetts.
Portsmouth.
At least Fall River.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's a city in Bristol. Bristol County, Massachusetts.
A lot of these accounts are Massachusetts and Maine. It's this area right here. I'll have this in the show notes too. This is a map. A lot of this goes from, Gloucester. There's a lot of historical accounts in Gloucester going up to Casco Bay. This is a drive time between those two places of about 2.5 to 3 hours. So as the sea monster swims, it's probably like a half hour swim. You know,
they're pretty quick.
So it's hugging this area of Massachusetts and Maine, but it's so close, especially in the ocean. You know what I mean? Especially for a large creature.
You think the sea monster swims that fast?
Oh, it swims fast, dude.
Shut up.
Yeah. Well, it's not hitting stoplights. It could do that in a half hour. But
no, come on.
What are you talking about?
You think it swims like 60 miles an hour?
Well, that's what they clocked it at some places.
Shut up.
They said that's
why would that be so weird?
It's really fast.
I guess it is pretty cool.
That's faster than a speedboat. How fast
does a cheetah swim?
How about not 60 miles an hour? Maybe like 30 or 35.
I'm gonna guess 40.
Maybe. That's pretty fast.
Let me Google dolphin speed.
Although it's hard to, water is much slower than land.
Yeah, orca swims 30.
And that's not sustained. That's like bursts.
Yeah, that's true. What they see is probably when it goes really fast, it's probably running away.
Yeah, the animals can't sustain that kind of speed.
Oh, wow. Dolphins only swim about 37 miles per hour.
37.
They can go over 20. 327.
See, I told 37. You. I'm right.
According
I'm
to Google,
right.
Short beak common dolphin, 37 miles an hour.
Oh, well, Google told me.
3 to 7 miles an hour.
It says bottlenose right there. Dolphins typically swim 3 to 7 miles per hour.
They can go over 20 miles per hour when they work hard.
Look, this is how Google is dividing the country. They're giving people different facts about dolphin speed.
You're saying that my quick walk is faster than a dolphin can swim.
You
can
walk
7 miles an hour?
Three?
That's at least a trot.
I can run.
Yeah, you could probably do a speed walk and a dolphin would probably be coasting along.
Click
at that
my
speed.
Link. This is silly. You really think that a top speed is 7 miles an hour for a dolphin?
Apparently, the short-beaked common dolphin can maximum speed is 37 miles an hour.
It doesn't say max. It just says
maximum.
Well, we're apparently getting a lot of different numbers here.
You think it swims casually?
Yeah, sure, but my point is, you think it's
so important!
You think it's... I'm going to cut a lot of this out. But my question is, go back to that, please. It doesn't matter. Keep it here. You think... So that's
go
just,
back to that, please. It doesn't matter. Keep it here.
It just said 37 miles an hour, right? Don't you think that's more likely a typo that it says they swim 3 to 7 miles an hour?
No, it's
their
a different
maximum
kind of dolphin.
Speed is exactly the same number if you put them together.
37 miles an hour in the water is crazy fast.
Dolphins typically swim 3 to 7 miles per hour. They can go over 20 miles per hour when they work hard. And in your case, 37 miles per hour is the max. Okay,
it's weird. It's just weird.
We're really glad we broke that down. Okay, let's move along here.
Please.
Where were we?
I don't know.
This lady. Mad that dolphins don't swim that fast.
I just thought it was
time.
Weird that it said 3 to 7, max 37. It looked like a typo.
Okay, where are you at there? All right, so there is an interview with Lauren Coleman that I'll link in the show notes, and there's an actual picture of this creature, Cassie, and that's where this area is where they saw this thing, and it's more of that kind of plesiosaur kind of looking thing, but the interesting thing about it is the neck has the white under the chin going down. You know, they talked about it looking like a basketball, except they described it as kind of flat on the bottom mm-hmm. and then angling down on the sides, looks like an upside down triangle, essentially.
A snake head.
And kind of a snakeish kind of face, but it's flat. The snorting nostrils, but that's in so many of these accounts in the same area. There's just a lot of interesting corroboration. Oh, here's the picture. So yeah, it looks a little more like the Loch Ness.
Right.
But there's the white stripe.
It looks like a carnivorous brontosaur.
Mm-hmm. In the water.
So like a plesiosaur, right? That'd be a plesiosaur.
But this depiction is like a serpent. Like the actual,
it doesn't have the full body with the flippers.
Mm-hmm. See, like it's easy to like joke around about it, but to see something like that with the teeth, like a snake.
Yeah.
You know how like snakes are, ugh.
Yeah. Imagine that with the size of a basketball and it hissing at you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like right, you're in
and
water.
It has layers of teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Rows. Of curved.
Of sharp teeth.
Curved in at 45 degree angle dagger teeth.
I wonder why it didn't attack him.
I don't know. I mean, Jeremy made that point about like, is this just another little like, mirage
like
for fear?
Thing?
Yeah. Yeah, these are actual...
I don't know.
I know, I feel like we can't chalk everything up to that. It's kind of lazy.
I especially think the water one is just, there's a lot of possibilities that we don't know about the water.
So here's the Cape Ann serpent. We'll put this in the show notes too, but that's an actual depiction at the time in like the 1800s or whenever it was, this old depiction. But imagine seeing that monster and you're in this like rowboat. But that's in the same area, Cape Ann. It's all in this like New England kind of coastal region.
You get a couple of counts in there, right?
Yeah.
To kind of back up, and again, to your point, Jer, I doubt these people know the detailed descriptions of this historic monster that seems to appear. There was a big flap, to use that word, of sightings.
A splash of sightings.
There's a splash of sightings that went on for a long period of time. It was like a decade or something in this area, and then went away for a while. Maybe it was longer than that, but and then now they're more sporadic. Like this, I think it's been a while since there's been like a legit encounter. But John, to answer your question, I've heard the point made that as simplistic as it is, it might just be, you know, you start losing these accounts and these sightings, these experiences, once you hit the industrial age and you start getting loud motors.
This was Lauren's argument too. Mm-hmm.
Right. They learn to avoid big boats with motors.
It
could
be the same with Bigfoot and stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And dogmen.
They hate dirt bikes.
Well, think about the waters. We used to be so still in the water. You know, you have a rowboat, no mechanical engine. Now that's with so much noise, essentially.
Humans are noisy now. Industrial Revolution changed everything.
And we have highways in the water. Just like animals tend to avoid the highway, generally.
We have routes that are typically taken.
Right, and so especially in bays where humans are, there's a lot of noise and traffic. So it makes sense that they would avoid that. So that's one argument for why we don't see
it. And I like that idea. Like the idea that if there are, and I'm not a nautical engineer, so I don't know exactly if this is true. No.
I thought you were.
I did too. And then I didn't get hired. if it's true that like boats typically take some like kind of the, not the same routes, but let's say there's a certain number of routes, right? In the massive oceans of the world, and there's these boats taking these typical ones, who knows what creatures are out there that just avoid those as a rule. And so you just never see a bunch of creatures that might be closer to the surface, but just stay out of those areas. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Well, here's another
an interesting idea.
Here's another corroboration right in that area from like the, I believe the 1700s or 1800s. Just a quick description. The throat and underside was pure white.
There it is.
Skin is usually smooth, though sometimes reported as rough. Scales are occasionally mentioned. Scales, right? What they kept saying, scales.
These accounts are hundreds of years apart.
Yeah.
From the 90s to like the 1590s, you know?
And it has an ovoid head, flat on top.
Exactly.
Triangle, upside down triangle. Large eyes, 6 inches in diameter, broad snout like an ox's, slender neck with one or two white stripes on the side. Throat and underside are white. Small triangular fins, so yeah.
Very similar.
Is there anything notable about the scales? I feel like everything on water has scales.
No,
snakes have scales.
It indicates
like dolphin
reptile,
scales?
Not fish or, well, I guess fish.
Have scales.
But dolphins, fish. Mammals, those things.
Right,
don't.
It wouldn't be a mammal. That'd be the idea that it's not a...
That's why I think what Lauren Coleman is talking about in that area is different.
Like a mammal.
It's different than what we're talking about, which is more
like whales serpentine. Mammals.
Right, whales are mammals. Orcas are are fish.
They're mammals too, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, they're
they
mammals.
Have live birth.
Sharks are fish. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, technically,
sharks are.
They're a type of fish, technically.
Yes,
just a mean. Terrible. What listener would like gave us a hard time because we talked about that
baby cold
baby shark eyes. Like obviously, we don't think sharks are evil.
The more you do a show, the more you realize every once in a while there's people out there that
something will set someone off.
Yeah, they get mad about the weirdest things.
Cold baby shark eyes. Like we really hate sharks.
They were upset that we
were defaming sharks.
Bad about baby sharks. We were totally joking to begin with.
I think the idea is that if we talk about cold baby shark eyes,
we were giving them a bad name.
Well, what's going to happen is one of our listeners is going to go out and start hunting sharks just to get rid of them. You know, like that's the fear.
Yeah.
I would be cool with that if they send us like a jaw to hang in the studio.
There you go. I wouldn't be cool with it, Chris.
I mean,
you're a mean
how much damage
person.
Can one shark hunter
okay,
do?
Now we're getting into territory where we're going to get calls.
Just kidding. Would you give a crap if you were being eaten by one?
What, the shark? No, if I was being eaten by one, I'd be like, kill them all right now.
Exactly.
But after I survived, I'd be like, he was misunderstood. He didn't think I was, you know, he thought I was a seal or something.
Be stewards of the earth.
Stewards of the earth. That's right. I love animals. Okay. So this is a quick bit comes from Gloucester, which is how you pronounce it, I guess, in that area, the Gloucester Sea Serpent. Now, this dates all the way back to 1639. This comes from a blog, actually. Kristen, you have a book on this, and you'll tell a couple brief accounts, but this comes from the Wormwood Files by Dr. Abner Malady. And at first, I was like, oh, that's cool. A doctor has written an article on this blog.
I get Abner. That's a pretty good
Abner
name.
Abner Malady. Obviously, a joke.
John?
But this is basically a breakdown of some of his experiences from that time. Helping the veracity of the witness reports was the fact that so many of them agreed with each other, like we talked about. The serpent was described the same way almost every time, length from 60 to 100 feet, making it a truly enormous animal. The dark brown to black coloration, the same shaped head, the same method of swimming. The most detailed report came from the outrageously named Reverend Cheever Felch. Okay, Dr. Malady. Outrageously named.
I'd call him the cattle, am I right?
A well-known minister of good character and some training as a naturalist. Felch sent a letter to the Boston Sentinel describing the encounter he had with the serpent while serving on the aptly named schooner Science. His color is dark brown with white under his throat. His size we could not accurately ascertain, but his head is about 3 feet in circumference, flat and much smaller than his body. We did not see his tail, but from the end of the head to the farthest protuberance was not far from 100 feet. I speak with a degree of certainty, being much accustomed to measure and estimate distances in length. I counted 14 bunches on his back. The first one, say 10 or 12 feet from his head, and the others about 7 feet apart. They decreased in size towards the tail. These bunches were sometimes counted with and sometimes without a glass, probably meaning like a telescope or a what are those called?
Kaleidoscope?
A pirate tube.
Yeah, like a magnifying glass for the ocean. Right. Yeah, we're smart.
A periscope.
That's not right at all.
Mr. Malborn counted 13, Mr. Blake 13 and 14, and the boatman the same number. His motion was partly vertical and partly horizontal, like that of freshwater snakes. I have been much acquainted with snakes in our interior waters. His motion was the same.
Okay, so that account
pretty
actually
damning evidence.
That account actually comes from like 1817, I believe. But there were a lot of accounts at that time, and that's the thing is like you get these in phases, but they're always this identical kind of descriptions of this serpentine kind of gigantic, scary creature.
Right.
In this area.
I think the one you were thinking of initially, that the account in 1639.
John Jocelyn.
So yeah, in 1639, and this guy, I like this guy. He reminds me of the Fox Mulder of the 17th century. Because he always wants to believe. He's a traveler, kind of an explorer, but he shares the tales that people tell him of the crazy experiences they've had. One that I didn't include about a merman that's pretty awesome.
Right. Didn't someone say he writes with credulity?
Right.
Meaning like he wants to believe
basically. So yeah, go ahead and read this, John. This is his account, the first account.
1639.
North America.
Or 1638.
June the 6th and 20th day. Very stormy. Lightning and thunder. I heard now two of the greatest and fearful thunderclaps that ever were heard. I am confident. At this time, we had some neighboring gentlemen in our house who came to welcome me into the country, where amongst a variety of discourse, they told me of a sea serpent or snake that lay coiled up like a cable upon a rock at Cape Ann. A boat passing by with English and two Indians on board. They would have shot the serpent, but the Indians dissuaded them, saying that if he were not killed outright, they would be all in danger of their lives.
Nice, yeah. John Jocelyn. So that's the first report in North America. That was 1638.
Imagine seeing that, like, coiled up in a rock.
Oh, and I love that.
Like, don't shoot it! Where it's going to eat us!
Yeah, the English are on the boat, and then there's a couple Indians on there. Then we call Native Americans. And then they're about to shoot this giant snake thing.
They're like,
don't do that. We'll die.
You're going to piss it off.
Yeah, you're not going to kill it.
Right.
This is a giant snake monster. Yeah.
That's good advice.
Good advice.
Don't shoot at the monster. Just slink on by in your ship.
Okay, so our last story here is probably the most famous in the area, I think, historically, because it comes from a naval ensign by the name of Edward Preble. Now, this takes place in Penobscot, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Sorry, guys, I'm not from New England. Penobscot in Maine, which again, this is all right in that area up there, New England off the coast in those cold waters. In 1779, the naval ensign Edward Preble had a close encounter with Cassie,
So after seeing the creature, he decides he's going to row out there towards the monster, right? So he rows out. He describes being able to see 10 feet of the creature above the waterline. But it looked at him, and when it looked at him, it frightened him so badly that when he was close enough, he fired his swivel gun, which this is awesome.
Wait, what is a swivel gun?
A swivel gun is...
Is that like a gun on a turret on a boat?
It's a gun on the side of a boat.
Okay, I can imagine it.
It's right here. There you go.
Fire in the hole!
I think you had this ready. It's those baby cannons you see on pirate ships. It's a little
rowboat cannon or whatever boat you have. It's kind of cool. But anyways, he fires this at the thing, and all it does is make the monster swim away even faster. But that was the first, one of the most significant sightings, because this guy, Ensign Edward Preble, went on to become Commodore Preble and formed the officer corps and would later lead the U.S. Navy in the War of 1812.
Oh, that's crazy.
So, you know, an important guy.
Yeah.
Has some credibility.
There's so many of these stories, guys, and we'll link to these, but there's literally hundreds of stories in just this area, just up in New England.
I went into this I wasn't even compelled to do this episode until we saw some of that stuff. And then when I Googled it, I found that interview that we'll have in the show notes. We'll put it up on the website. And then finding all these corroborations with this account, I am pretty darn sure that this thing exists or has existed in the very recent past. And that scares me a little bit.
No, it doesn't scare you.
Well, if I was in the ocean, it would.
Oh, yes, it would.
I'm not scared here in Ohio on land.
Yeah, we're
in John's apartment. This thing just came up and knocked on your door.
I am a little worried about the potential future flooding of the world where I don't have anywhere to hide, though.
There you go. With climate change, these things will be everywhere. I'm scared.
Al Gore will be rowing on his boat
He'll be riding him. He'll be the master of the snake serpents.
He'll have the Al Ark, and it'll be pulled by these Gloucester serpents. Awesome. This thing, I'd be scared in the oceans, just hanging out in the ocean thinking about this thing, but also in lakes. Seneca Lake, New York.
There's plenty of lakes.
There's lake monsters like this.
And lakes
too.
And lakes, man.
Don't live YOLO out there. Do what you want, but I'm just saying.
Just know that you may die if you YOLO.
It's possible.
The most impressive, you guys can check it out. We won't play it because you can't see it anyway, but the most impressive, I think, proof of a lake monster is in Turkey. And it's the largest saltwater lake, I think, in Turkey. But this video footage is insane. You can tell it's skin. This thing is there. It's not a shadow. It's not a log. Anyway, we'll have that linked for you guys. I'll show John after the break so he can be amazed, or after the end. But I think that wraps up, that coils up this episode.
Ooh, that's creepy.
Oh, you seeing it?
Is that real?
Yeah.
Is it the eye?
It'll zoom in.
This is the same day?
This guy said he got it three times because he's been looking for this thing forever. Apparently, there's hundreds of accounts of this thing throughout the years.
This is in Turkey. This is Turkey, huh?
I forget the name of the lake. I didn't capture this because...
It's the Lake...
Lake Van, that's
Lake
right.
Van.
Is that the guy?
That's the guy who was taking this footage.
Is October 2006, it looks like.
He'd been casing the place for a long time.
What is that? It looks like an elephant.
It looks like an elephant eye.
But wait till it goes back. You can see the whole body, kind of. It looks like an elephant, except there's no ear.
There it is.
And look at that. That's definitely an eyeball.
Yeah. It looks like a knobby elephant head, except...
We know it definitely is a real animal that's there.
Oh, yeah.
That can't be an elephant.
That almost looks like a crocodile back or something.
Yeah, but just really long.
Yeah.
We'll put this in the show notes, guys, too. This is called Turkey Pictures of Lake Monster.
The beautiful lake there.
The Associated Press. Anyway, what do you guys think out there, huh? You guys let us know.
Have you seen a sea monster?
Yes. And if you have, please.
I mean, out of everything else, like, of course, it's just like another thing. Like, of course, it's probably possible.
I know. Does this get tiring that at the end of all these episodes, we're like, I mean, it's definitely.
We do. We've been doing a lot of cryptids and monsters.
I know.
We're going to.
Next time, right?
Yeah. Next time we will be talking.
Magic of sound.
Yes. It'll be different road next.
What about the expansion? The expansion, we're not sure. It'll be, you guys will hear it because there'll be a preview of it. But at this stage, I think we're kind of up in the air about what the expansion is going to be.
It'll be a surprise.
This release.
It's up in the air.
But it won't be a cryptid, John.
It might be up in the air. I was thinking about doing...
I'm not saying that, you know, I've enjoyed them. It's just we have just done a lot of them.
I know. It is late in the day, too, which is
almost seems like we're more of a cryptid podcast than...
Well, it's part of the paranormal.
It is.
Yeah, it is. We didn't do many ghosts, though, for...
I was thinking of doing... Speaking of that and speaking of up in the air, I was thinking of doing Haunted Skies. I've got some pretty awesome...
What does that mean?
Haunted airplane stories.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds almost as boring as...
I mean, I think that idea is really cool because I like the idea.
Haunted airplanes?
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be the only thing. I've just got a couple good accounts. One is person giving their account of, that's more of a time slip. It could be a time slip. We could do time storms. I finally got that time storms book I've been wanting to do.
I don't know. I always hear stuff and then I'm like, ugh. And then usually they're pretty good.
Yeah. Like this one, right?
You thought it was going to be Dalton. Yeah. Honestly, like the sea monster thing is really like not interesting to me, but there were some good stories for sure.
Thank you, John. I'm glad we, one of our hardest critics.
Just the topic itself.
I agree.
It's like below Bigfoot.
It wasn't until I heard that interview that I saw the interview.
Yeah,
that
no,
I was
there's
like,
some creepy. It's just like, all I think of is like that when I hear.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
The
picture up right now is just like a typical
The devil
little,
is in the details.
Yeah.
Like once we get into this stuff.
Some of the interviews were, and the real stories are pretty creepy.
Yeah. See, we're not going to bring anything to you or to the audience that is dull.
Right.
We always look for the what's in the crevices of the dark
if
shadowy.
If I can't find passion in an episode, we junk it. You know, like yeah. We did Roanoke and we're like, there's actually not a lot of mystery there that we thought right. There was. And we got rid of it last minute. Had to redo it. So, I mean, same thing here. Like if I didn't find this, the only reason I wanted to do it is because of that inspired me seeing that interview and it freaking me
and
out.
And the story
from the 65 yeah. About yeah, the actual people that lost
deliver,
their lives.
I must say.
Hey, yeah, thanks, John.
Most of the time.
You used to work for pizza outfits.
Without so. Your without your invested repartee through the episode, I don't think they would be nearly as enjoyable. So it works out.
Well, you give us a high bar to jump, John.
Yeah, it's important. If we can keep you entertained with this stuff,
right.
Then hopefully we keep the other people entertained.
I'm a good canary in the coal mine.
Well, you guys stick around. If you're an expansion member, make sure to check out the expansion episode. I think my favorite episodes of the season so far have been in the expansion. Also, what we get to do is we get to do those fun little improv things.
We should play one of those.
This is why I love
We should play one at the end.
Yeah, let's do it. Which one?
We'll play the last one. The Halloween
one? Oh, the trick or treat.
Okay, for Halloween... Okay. Expansion episode preview. We'll do a little extra treat for all of our listeners.
So every expansion episode now we do, an improv thing. At the beginning, it's all off the cuff and it's a scene based on what the episode's going to be.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You hope you guys like it.
It's become a theme.
But yeah, so that's just to say expansion episodes are a little more laid back, a little more fun, but they're just as researched and entertaining and produced just because it's the nature of being behind the, you know, the wall.
All right, guys, on that note, we hope you liked this episode. Make sure to stay out of the water.
Leave reviews. If you want to help us out, leave a review on
tell
iTunes,
your friends.
Spotify, Facebook recommendations. Tell your friends and let us know how you shared us and we'll give you super high fives.
All righty. You stay safe out there. Watch out for those sea monsters.
Yeah. And until next time,
we'll see ya
in
the Belief Hole.
So cool.
Are you excited to go out today, Billy?
Yeah, Jimmy, I can't wait. It's going to be the best Halloween ever. I got my best costume. Let's go. Let's go get some candy.
Yeah, you look great. What are you?
I'm a trampoline salesman.
Odd choice.
So what are you supposed to be?
I'm, Rob Lowe.
Oh, okay.
This is my mom's idea. She watches him all the time. I don't really understand who he is.
All right, let's go get some candy. Where should we go first? What's the best place, do you think?
All the kids have been talking about old Mr. McGregor's house.
Well, Mr. McGregor? My mom told me that he died like 3 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, look up there. The lights are on.
Okay. Well, maybe she was wrong. Let's go. Let's go get some candy, Mr. McGregor's.
All right, hop on my pegs.
Oh, you're wet.
That's sweaty.
It
rained last night. I didn't take it in the garage.
Do you sweat that much normally? Very sweaty for a Halloween night. Okay, let's go. Okay. So who told you he was dead?
I don't have to go the whole backstory.
Okay.
Boy, I sure don't remember this house being this creepy.
Yeah, it looks different, doesn't it?
You ring the doorbell.
Okay, hold on.
Well, hello, children. Is it Halloween again?
Yeah, Mr. McGregor, yes.
Oh, my favorite time of year. I'm so glad you came. I don't have any candy, though.
Well, I guess we'll be on our way.
No, don't leave. Warm an old man's heart. Come on in and just spend a few moments with me.
Well,
okay.
My mom says I'm not supposed to, but I guess it's okay.
It's fine. Come on in.
Okay.
Say, Mr. McGregor.
Yes.
You said you didn't know it was Halloween, but you look like you're wearing a bit of a costume. You have the pale face makeup on,
that's
the bloodshot eyes.
That's just me being 95. How dare you?
Sorry, I didn't mean any
You're
offense.
A terrible child.
Oh.
No, I'm sorry. Just come with me. I want to show you my house.
Okay. That's odd, but okay.
No, it's fine. I'm still alive, so it's okay.
Odd, you need to clarify.
What are you supposed to be anyways, twerp?
Rob Lowe?
Who's that?
I'm not sure.
Rob Lowe, what about you?
I'm a werewolf.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right?
Oh, you were a trampoline salesman.
Yeah. Changed. I guess werewolves change.
It makes more sense.
Very anthropy. Oh, it's very drafty in here, Mr. Yeah. McGregor.
Well, it's because it's an old house with an old man that runs the old house.
Well, I don't mean to be pushed. We got a lot of other houses to hit. Where's the candy?
Well, if you just follow me into this room, it's in this giant hole.
What? What do you mean there?
It's right
that
there.
Dark, creepy, yeah. giant chasm?
Well, why don't you, the candy's just through that hole. If you just go over and check it out.
What, why is there a giant hole in your wall,
You
Mr.
ask
McGregor?
A lot of questions, punk.
Well, before I walk into a scary hole,
Billy,
I kind of want
Billy,
to...
we got other places to go. Just get in the hole.
Oh, yeah, there's so much candy in there. I can't even... That's why it's so big.
Okay, well, I'm just going to creep up kind of to the edge and just kind of peek in, okay?
Go ahead,
hey, Billy,
fine.
Billy, don't worry. I'll be back here watching out for you. Just get on in there and get some candy for us.
Okay. What is that accent?
You sound like Frank Reynolds.
Go get Billy, some candy, Billy, just go get some candy. I'll stay back here and watch from behind.
You turned into a Brooklyn accent.
That's where I grew up.
We've not practiced much. Okay.
Hey, get in the hole, Billy. Get some candy.
Geez, okay. Okay, I'm gonna go look in the hole, okay? But just hold on to my belt or something, okay?
Okay.
Go for it, kids.
Okay, my hands in the hole.
Keep reaching.
What is that sound?
It's deeper.
What's that? The sound's in there. This doesn't feel right. Something's
keep
wrong.
Keep going.
I can't feel my body.
Keep going.
Billy.
It's all in the hole.
What is a body? I can't remember anything.
You're in the hole.
I forgot to mention
the Believeful.
Welcome, welcome. Happy Halloween. That was interesting.
That was rough.
No, it's going to be good.
It's going to be great.
Okay, let's.
Yeah.